what it means to be a loving community. And in this whole little series we're doing about the church and about God's original intent for the church, if we could get rid of all the other talks, I think this is the one, this is the theme that's probably the most important. This is the one that is at the heart of what it means to be the church, I think. And we're going to unpack that a little bit this morning. But to start with a little story, and I think when you hear this story, I'm sure it will resonate with most of you who have been a Christian for a while, and you've probably got your own experiences like this. So a couple of years ago, I was in a local school, local to here, and I was doing a lesson. I used to go in quite regularly and do lessons for years 9, 10, and 11 on just different things about the Christian faith, which was really great. And had some brilliant conversations. And one particular day, I finished a lesson, and I was just chatting with a group afterwards, and one lad just came to me, and you can always tell when they've got a gripe about the Christian faith. And he came to me and he said, "You know, the thing that annoys me about Christians is that they've always got an answer for everything." And I thought, yeah, I know. No, I didn't. I remember spending the rest of the conversation trying desperately not to give an opinion on anything whatsoever. And at one point I did, and he was like, "See, I told you." And but that was his experience. And I don't think he was naive enough to think, he wasn't saying Christians have opinions on stuff and that annoys me, because that would be ridiculous. What he was saying was, the Christians he'd met had been so sure of what they think and believe that they don't have time or room to listen to anyone else. That was his experience. And obviously, we know, thank the Lord, that that is not true of Christians per se. You can't label any person the same as any other person. But it made me sad, and because I thought, that is somebody's understanding of a whole group of people, the people that I belong to and the faith I belong to. And I was wondering, hands up if you resonate with that, as in you've encountered someone that's had an opinion of the Christian faith that is not what it should be. Yeah, okay. Everyone, basically. And so, our reading today, well, I'm not going to focus so much on the reading we've just done, actually, so apologies for that. I'm going to focus on the reading that we had right at the start of the service, which was two verses from John chapter 13. But first, I want to put a bit of context on it. And I'm sorry if you've heard me say this for the last few weeks, but it's actually really, really helpful, I think, particularly in the light of this verse. So if you want to look at it again, it's John 13, 34 and 35. And just to give you the context, again, Jesus was Jewish, if you didn't know that. And being Jewish meant you had a really strong sense of identity. Your identity was in this covenant relationship with God. You understood yourself to be Jewish if you were in a covenant relationship with God, which was marked in a couple of ways. One was a really physical way, which was circumcision, which we've talked about. One was that you obeyed the law, and also that you went to temple. And that was, these were all really significant parts of being Jewish, the identity of a Jewish person. But more than that, if you were lucky enough to be the follower of a rabbi, so a teacher of the law, if a teacher of the law had said, "Yes, you can be my follower, you teach," you might be known for being the follower of a particular rabbi or a particular tradition. So a rabbi, so say I am Simon the rabbi, I might have a particular interpretation of the law, a particular rabbinical tradition, they call it. And so you might be identified as Simon's follower if you had a particular understanding or reading of the law. If you said things about the law in a certain way, they go, "Ah, you're of this tradition, you're a rabbi, Rabbi Simon is of that tradition." And so that's really important in the context of this verse. So when Jesus says in John chapter 13, by this, all men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. He's saying something really significant in that context. He's saying you won't be known for a particular interpretation of the law, what you believe, the words you say. You won't be known as a follower of mine because of some particular physical appearance, for circumcision or today, because not there's anything wrong with these things, but because you wear a cross around your neck or because you have Jesus tattooed on your arm. You know, people aren't going to know you're my disciple because of that. Or it's not about special places. It's not because you go to church or mass or anything else. People will know you're my disciples. The mark of being a Christian, a follower of Jesus, will be the love you have for one another. Now, you might have heard that 100 times, and that might sound so, yeah, I've heard that, that's so obvious. But that has massive implications for the way people of faith, people who are followers of Jesus, live their lives. In the words of Michael Ball, and I listened to this morning because it came into my head, love changes everything, how you live and how you die. It does. It changes everything. It changes. And I'm not saying let's get fixated on reputation, because that can just be an adventure in missing the point in itself. When you get, it can be an adventure in serving the ego, but also reputations are fleeting, aren't they? They sometimes can be unfair. They sometimes can be tarnished by a minority that's associated or within your particular faith. Or they can just be the result of some sort of prejudice, pre-existing prejudice. So I'm not saying let's get overly concerned by what people say about us. But the implications of it are huge for how we understand ourselves and how we live out our faith in community. I think Jesus is saying, what I want you to be most concerned about, followers of mine, the thing at the top of your agenda, your priority list, whatever else you're doing in my name, whatever else you're seeking in my name, whatever else you're praying for, the top of my agenda for you is that you love one another. And everything else should be done in the light of that. Well, you might think, well, what kind of love is Jesus talking about? Because, you know, I love my mum. Is it like that? People use the word love so liberally nowadays, don't they? I love ice cream. I love this. I love that. I love all these I love t-shirts. I love pizza, that sort of thing. And it just weakens the term love. What do we have to measure it by? What is Jesus talking about? Well, verse 34 is the answer to that question, I think. And Jesus says, love one another. And here's the key bit. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. We've got to remember that this is written years after the death of Jesus. So, as I have loved you, how has Jesus loved his disciples? Well, we'll unpack a couple of things, but he laid down his life for his disciples. There's a great bit somewhere else where Jesus, earlier in one of the Gospels, says, if all you do is love the lovable, do you expect a bonus? Anybody can do that. If you simply say hello to those who greet you, do you expect a medal? Any run-of-the-mill sinner does that. So when Jesus says, love one another as I have loved you, I think he's saying a few things. He's saying, this affects how you relate to your enemies. As I have loved you, because Jesus didn't just love the lovable. He didn't just love people that loved him. He loved people that hated him. And the Apostle Paul, who is also one of the founders of the early church, he said this. He said, whilst we were still sinners, Christ died for us. And so Jesus' love is for people that don't even like him, that reject him. What are the implications of that for us? This isn't easy love, because easy love is when everything's going well and it's people you get on with and everything's fine. But love in the biblical sense, in the Jesus sense, is worked out when things aren't going well, when people don't like you, when people speak ill of you, when people have a different opinion to you. That's when true love is worked out, as I have loved you. It also has implications for the whole hierarchical system of the world we live in. You know, there's a brilliant bit in Mark chapter 13 where Jesus encounters a couple of disciples who are arguing who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Remember, they live in this world where, you know, the greatest are definitely at the top, and they know it, and they make a show of it, and they lead like that. We're at the top, you're at the bottom, do what we say. And Jesus says this to them. He says, the Gentiles rule like that. They lord it over people and they know they're in charge. Not so with you. The greatest among you is the least. For even the Son of Man, Jesus, myself, did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life. So he changes it all. It's not top down anymore. It's bottom up. The implications are huge. I find this really difficult myself. I find this so challenging, because if you might not have worked this out about me yet, but I'm actually a very emotional person. I know, it's hard to believe, isn't it? And so quite often I have to fight being led by my emotions, and I have to stop myself sometimes. Amy knows this very well. And I have to think about what love means and what it is to be loving in any given situation, because my emotions are trying to tell me something different. But I've realized that the love that Jesus talks about is a love that makes choices every single day. You can't say we're a loving community, that's it, because being a loving community is worked out in the day-to-day living, isn't it? I might be the most loving person in the world one day and the grumpiest, meanest person in the world the next day. I don't think I am, but I could be. And so love doesn't always feel good, does it? Sometimes love is doing the opposite of what your emotions tell you to do. It doesn't always feel good, but it doesn't always feel right either. And sometimes love, the loving thing, feels wrong. You think, this is unjust. Why have I got to do this? Why have I got to say sorry? It doesn't feel right sometimes, the emotions of it. Not only that, but love might be inconvenient too. And so when we talk about love, we're not talking about some lovely thing. Love isn't always lovely. There, that's a slogan for you. In Romans chapter 5, so again, the Apostle Paul, he kind of sums it up really well, the difficulty of this whole thing of loving someone that might be just really hard to love, someone that's hurt you. How do you love someone that's hurt you? But the Apostle Paul says this. He says, we can understand someone dying for a person worth dying for, and we can understand how someone good and noble could inspire us to selfless sacrifice. But God put his love on the line for us by offering his Son in sacrificial death while we were of no use whatever to him. Paul wrote a lot about love because he was one of the, as I said, one of the founders of the church. And when you read about the early church, they were a messy bunch. They were very messy, weren't they? When you read the book of 1 Corinthians, which was one of Paul's most famous letters that he wrote to a church, he was writing to a church that were, they were messy. And yet one of the most beautiful pieces of text, letters ever written, came out of that. So actually, maybe it's not so bad after all. But they were a church that was divided. They were a church in massive, with massive situations of immorality that they were dealing with. They were a church that were arguing about who they followed, and but also a huge amount of comparison between people and divides in wealth and all sorts of things. And so Paul was really trying to deal with this, the issue of identity at the heart of the church, trying to pull them all together around something. And last week we talked about how you can be such a diverse group but be one body, which is what the church is. And into this situation, with all that mess going on, Paul writes this. He says, in 1 Corinthians 14:1, he says, follow the way of love. Follow the way of love. What I really love about that is that love is a way of life. And love is not something you do amongst all the other things you do. Oh, now I'll do this and be loving. It's not that. It's not a thing you do. Love is the way you do everything you do. Paul's saying, follow the way of love. It's the road you walk. It's the journey you take. It's not just something you choose along the way. And it's worked out in the day-to-day, in day-to-day living. He goes on later to say, do everything in love. And this morning we're going to share communion together. And that is a look at the way of love. It's a reminder. And thinking about it this morning, and thinking that for Jesus, the way of love was ultimately the way of the cross. And that's the way of love for us too. If we're confused about what it means to be loving, we need to think about this. And that's why we share this meal so often, this symbolic meal, to remember that the way of love for our community is the way of the cross. Not only that, it's to remember that we're loved. John, who wrote John the Gospel, but also the letters of 1 John and the others, he really got this. He talked about love so much. If you read 1 John, it's all about love. He's strong as well. He says, you know, if you claim to love God but hate your brother, you're a liar. You know, he doesn't pull any punches on it. He's strong on this. That actually love for God and love for brother and sister, love for each other, are the same thing. They're two sides of the same coin. I love God by loving my neighbor. Jesus said, you know, whatever you do for the least, you're doing for me. They're not different things. They're one and the same thing. But this meal is about a God that loves us as well. And we love because God first loved us, and it's so important for us to experience that love for ourselves. I'm so thankful that the Apostle Paul didn't just write about loving others. He said, the love of Christ compels me. It's a love that I've experienced for myself. And for me, it was a love I first experienced when I was 15. And it was a huge moment for me. And I knew how utterly loved I was. And I've not always appreciated this meal for what it is. But this morning, I hope that it will be a reminder to us that we have a God that loves us so much that he doesn't want to punish us for the wrong we do in our world, for the wrong we do to each other. He wants to win us through giving of himself, win us back to him, to take care of all our misdeeds and wrongs, and show how loved we are. So I'm going to end there, and we're going to sing a song that John's asked us to sing, and it's a response to this. It's a response to God's love for us, shown through the cross, shown through laying down his own life. And then we're going to move into a time of communion together, which John will take on from there. So we'll stand. Let's stand.